We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
I consider myself, although I have long periods between movies, I consider myself very blessed because it's whether I'm an acquired taste or I'm a recognizable signature, whatever it is, people know what to expect when they hear my name. And I think that has allowed me to keep working steadily.
Guillermo del Toro loves cinema, and cinema loves him right back. He also knows the value of listening to your collaborators and fellow filmmakers about getting the best possible result when making a feature, especially when it's a passion project. I'm Clayton Davis. On this episode of the award-winning Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to the visionary filmmaker about his new animated film, Pinocchio, discussing the process of bringing it to the big screen, which took over 1,000 days to shoot, and the 22 scripts he's yet to make. Later, we chat with actor Charmaine Bingwa about her new film, Emancipation. But first, the roundtable looks at the winners from last weekend's Gotham Awards and at the reviews for Will Smith's new film, Emancipation. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close.
Hey, everybody. It is the Variety Award Circuit Roundtable. That's where you guys clap or applaud or scream. Woohoo! Hey, I am TV editor Michael Schneider. I am with Clayton Davis.
It's good to be with you.
Yes, indeed. And Jazz Tanke.
Hello.
I stepped on Jazz. See, this is what happens when we're not in the same room
typical
again.
Typical man in Hollywood, stepping on women.
Dogs and cats coming together.
And we got Janelle Riley and... Yeah, hello. So it's kind of confusing because Clayton and I are in the same room together, and then Jazz is at her house, Janelle is at her house. This is like the pandemic part three still happening, where we're all sort of separated, but nonetheless, we're bringing the heat.
I had that respiratory thing that's going around. I had that last week. The whole family got it.
Oh, thanks for giving that to us.
Yeah, I didn't give it to you.
I appreciate that. Yeah,
no, I'm done.
That's why Jazz and I sit.
But yeah, that sucked. It was just a cough.
By the way, you only know that this is my house because my headshot is behind me.
And all your goodies.
Yes, yes, the baby Yoda was a...
But also in true Janelle style, she's actually taking a COVID test as we speak, so...
I am. It's looking good.
Yeah, this
so
is
far.
Like Maury Povich. By the end of the episode, we'll find out if you are the father.
So. Tick, tick, tick.
I mean, it's been about 10 minutes because we...
I hate those. I hate those flat ones. I like the big... When you put the batteries in and
the Lucira one?
Lucira.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. I can't afford that. These are
no,
the
I only like the when they send you the Luciras. And the best part is you only use those yes. batteries briefly. So then you save the batteries and suddenly you have
free
a couple
batteries.
More free double
A
batteries.
It says not to save the batteries. It says you should throw them out.
That seems
very
wasteful.
There was, I swear to God, this now we're all off topic, but I swear, I think in Telluride, they had like a bunch of Luciras. And there was a critic going around asking for everyone's batteries and took them all home.
That sounds like a journalist.
Yeah.
Please tell me that he was putting them in a bag and like.
I like your assumption that it was a he, but it was totally a he.
Of course.
I mean.
Totally.
First of all journalists are men, right?
Yeah. But also that's something I would do too, by the way. I would ask people, but I would check and see if anyone left behind their free batteries because hey, free batteries.
Free batteries. Batteries are expensive.
Yeah.
They're not letting you on the plane with all those batteries.
Oh, yeah, true.
I suppose that's true. Well, speaking of traveling, ooh, look at this segue. Ooh. I am a professional.
Speaking of traveling and COVID, because Steven Spielberg got COVID.
Oh, yes.
And couldn't attend the Gotham Awards.
So protect Steven Spielberg at all costs.
Oh, my God.
Wrap him in bubble wrap. Preserve that man at all costs.
Even now, because, you know, when you hear someone gets COVID, you're kind of like, whatever, guys. Like, we think everyone gets COVID. But when you hear Spielberg gets COVID, you're like, wait.
Well, and I've heard, like, the recent strains, I've heard of a number of people who've recently gotten COVID, and it's been bad. They've actually had a pretty bad case of it.
I had it bad.
And you kind of forget, like, because, you know, a lot of people, I luckily, knock on wood, when I had COVID in March, it was pretty light. So I think I'm sort of a little bit, you know, arrogant about it now, and I should probably slow my roll, because who knows?
Mike sounds like me back in August.
Right?
When I came back from Cannes, and I was like, I'm invincible. I can never get COVID again, because I was convinced I was getting it there.
Yeah.
And then, oh, my God.
Well, I was, before you got here, Clayton, I was talking about how my 3-month immunity expired from having it in August. And I went to a Thanksgiving dinner where the host had COVID. And I was like, if I literally get it 1 week after my super immunity expired, well, I'm going to be just as mad as if I'd gotten it any other time. But point stands.
A little COVID with your stuffing, a little COVID with your turkey. Delicious. That's 2022 in a nutshell. But
yeah, Spielberg wasn't there to present to Michelle Williams, who got a tribute award for her career, aka for The Fabelmans. She was presented by Paul Dano.
For Dawson's Creek, to be honest. It was Dawson's Creek.
One of the best speeches I've ever heard in my life. I did not expect her to bring up her wonderful grandmother, Mary Beth Peel.
Uh-huh. Graham. Graham's from the show.
But I don't know if you guys saw, I think it was on the Daily Mail that said she spoke about her like she was dead and she's alive. And I was like, I knew she was alive, but when they read it back, I'm like, I guess you can.
I mean, I had to Google just to make sure, because I was like, oh, wow, is she still alive? Yeah. Because you're right. The way she's been talking about her on this press tour, it almost sounds like it's a farewell to someone who meant something to her.
But it was so nice to just hear about Dawson's Creek. But, like, listen, Michelle Williams has been revered and loved for so many years. She gave a great speech. Her BFF, Busy Phillips, was there next to her, holding her hand throughout. And it was a great evening that also got tributes from Adam Sandler, who
looks like he killed it. Like, he brought down the house. He's been great, like, at award shows for several years now. I mean, he is, like, the ultimate winner.
He is killing it on the circuit. And I think he's great in Hustle. I know Janelle feels similar.
Love Hustle. Yes. I'm so glad it's finally getting the push.
And Netflix is giving their all to it, and I'm glad that they are. Do I think it's going to work out for him in the end? I don't know. Like,
I think it could. I mean, Best Actor is weird.
It's okay to say this part. He's been better before, and they passed.
I disagree.
You think this is the best?
I think Hustle is his best performance. I've said that repeatedly. I think Hustle is his best performance.
And I think if you see it that way, then I think it's easier then to see the pathway. But I'm of the mind, like, listen, if he gets it for this, I think it's just time that we move towards, let's nominate Adam Sandler. It's okay. It's okay, Academy. You can do this.
Well, I said this when I was introducing him in last week's Q&A. I basically said something to the extent, like, we can all stop pretending we're surprised he can act and that he can do dramatic roles. Mm-hmm. Like, we've moved on from that. We know that. Like,
yeah. Because in theory, this should be nomination number 3. In, like, if you really were, like, going through his, you know, Punch Drunk Love and Uncut Gems.
Well, maybe it's time.
I wanted to kill him in Uncut Gems, which means he was very, very good. Like, he that character annoyed me so much, I wanted to physically get on the screen and slap him around.
Yeah. And then the other tribute was Gina Prince-Bythewood, the woman king, who also gave an amazing speech. Very personal, moving, talked about finding her birth mother and learning that Gina herself was a product of a possible rape. And first time she had really spoken about that publicly. And the three of them, I did a column on this, Adam Sandler, Michelle Williams, Gina Prince-Bythewood, I looked at them. I was like, keep doing this all season, guys. The three of you are getting in.
Gina's killing the circuit this year.
Yeah,
I have to say.
She's doing well.
She's doing very well.
I really hope they do it. We've never had a black woman nominated for director. It's about time. Adam Sandler never had an Adam Sandler nominated for best actor. It's about time, you know. And Michelle Williams, I think, feels really safe. I think it's. But I, it's the first time I looked at her and I was like, yeah, she could totally win best actress.
The speaking of directors, I think are sort of overdue and haven't been nominated. I have been continually shocked at the response to Elvis at guild screenings. I mean, this movie is on HBO Max. It's been out a while. They're still packing them in, you know, and very enthusiastic audiences who line up early. And it's, you know, they've like at this point, I think Austin Butler might be the front runner. He's people are so enamored of him. But boy, the response to Baz Luhrmann.
That is so interesting because it does feel like Elvis came out 3 years ago.
I mean, it,
yes,
yeah.
It did.
Well, it was supposed to be made 5 years ago.
That is true. Yeah.
But Baz is, has never been nominated for director.
He has
only
not.
Been nominated for
now, that is surprising.
Yeah. Moulin Rouge.
That is surprising.
That's right, isn't it?
Because Moulin Rouge, so. Man, he was the big miss that year, and it was really sad. And Moulin Rouge, winner of PGA, was like two threats to win Best Picture that year until Baz missed. And he was also at the Gothams. He presented and just like looks phenomenal. Like just like is
he
very
does.
Just.
And he had the coolest diamond encrusted EP ring.
Oh,
for Elvis Presley.
He was wearing something on his jacket that I couldn't like really make out, but he was just very fashionable, obviously.
Yeah. Ridiculously fashionable.
And but yes, I do think Baz and Elvis, I mean, and I know that it's divided in social media, Twitter sphere, but we've been here before. Bohemian Rhapsody, been here before. Like it's going to happen. I think people just need to accept it. And we can
What is Best Picture?
I think it's getting in Best Picture.
Oh yeah, I do too.
I think it needs to get in Best Picture in order for Austin to get in Best Actor. But I think both those things are happening.
I think Austin could win Best Actor with this movie not getting anything else, but I think it will.
Another film that's very popular still over the holidays is Top Gun. Like people revisited that, and that is still those screenings that they're putting on are selling out. It's like people, it's like, I think we discussed it, Clayton, when we talked about SCAD, Savannah, how some people were only watching that for the first time.
Over 50% of my audience at the Top Gun screening was seeing it for the first time.
People also have to, I mean, listen, it made $1 billion, so like good for it. But $1 billion doesn't equate to the entire Earth. So there are going to be a lot of people who are experiencing it for the first time. And that magic can carry. Top Gun is going to do really, really well. And
it's finally going to hit streaming at the end of the year. So
not before it gets re-released and makes a few more bucks. Yeah, Jesus.
They like money, unlike Netflix, which apparently doesn't really care about money when it comes to what they're leaving on the table by pulling Glass Onion out of theaters.
I was telling some Netflix people, I was like, spike the ball, man. You guys like spike the ball at other times. Like this is a time that you have full range. Like we opened this in theaters and it made some money. Like, leave it there a little longer. Like, go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? But it, listen.
Why do you think? I mean, what's your theory on?
I mean, and this, I wish Brian Steinberg was on this podcast. He could really, like, answer this in time.
Well, we're sorry we're not.
I know. Well, Brian Steinberg.
You got
Todd,
the B team here. Yeah. What can we say?
Well, I was going to say, like, ultimately, it's all about subscriber numbers, right? Like, it's the ultimate goal. So I think having a spike the ball on a movie theater as a streaming person, that's a streaming entity, doesn't really bode well.
But it is an interesting 3 week gap of pulling it from theaters, but then we still have to wait to actually watch it on Netflix until, you know, Christmas.
Yeah. Which is going
to
be great.
In a way, it almost calls more attention to the fact that like Netflix subscribers don't have it yet. You know,
I guess, I mean, we'll see. It's the anticipation. Clearly, it's going to do well when it does premiere on Netflix.
I also love how they're still begging people like, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. And it's like, guys, you're risking it. It premiered at TIFF in September. Like we are playing with fire right now.
Yeah. No. But looking at the winners list for Gothams, it's almost like they listened to the Award Circuit podcast.
Mm. Listen, biggest surprise of the night. Pleasant surprise, Danielle Deadwyler.
Yeah.
I mean, yep.
Who wasn't there. I was furious. Furious.
Why?
Shooting. Couldn't get out of production.
Well, work is
which,
work.
By the way, like, I bet that'll never happen again now. Because this is not only that she won. She beat, because they're non-gendered categories at Gotham's, she beat Brendan Fraser, Cate Blanchett, and Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, yeah. Thandie Newton. I mean, it's...
She did it. And listen, again, it's a group of five, so it's a jury thing, and I get it. But still, it really says something.
Yeah. No, that was great. And then Ki-Hwai Kwan.
The train. The train started, and it is on its way.
Oh, the train started back
but,
in.
But this is the official, train. This is that now. It is. It would take an act of God. We would have to find out that he was Summer of Sam to lose supporting actor. And even then, I think people would be like, but it was before everything.
Right, exactly. Remember when he was the Zodiac killer. Yeah. But, you know, he's still from Goonies.
Yeah. I think he's still Goonies. So we're going to give it to him anyway.
It all comes together.
But heartfelt. I don't know if you guys peep when Everything Everywhere won Best Feature. Ki-Hwai Kwan goes and gives someone a five on stage, and it's me because I'm right there in front.
Oh, wow.
He saw me and then ran and gave me a five.
So oh, like, look at that.
I was like, look. And then, yeah, his wife is adorable. He's the sweetest man. And this is Troy Kotsur part two. Mm. And
the feel good story of the year.
You can't be mad at this.
No.
And no one's going to be mad that, like, you know, we didn't give it to Brendan Gleeson or Judd Hirsch. Like, nope. We're going to be like, nope, Ki-Hwai Kwan has an Oscar. It's a good world to
live. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's fun.
And that's no shade to Gleeson and Hirsch, by the way. They're great, but just saying. Kwan is, it's the best story.
Oh, and hopefully, if they're smart, they'll have, like, Harrison Ford give out that award.
I mean, technically, it's supposed to be Ariana DeBose, which is still a great moment.
Well, maybe they could be paired.
But it's, yes, if they paired it properly, then yes, that would be quite.
That would be fun, right? Oh,
but also too orchestrated. Do you remember the year that Scorsese won, and he was giving it?
Oh yeah.
And Spielberg, Coppola, and George Lucas gave it to him.
Yep.
And I was like, guys, you were risky here.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
that could be awkward.
He had lost so many
times.
Look
at the year they put Best Actor last, assuming Chadwick Boseman. Yeah.
That's when you jinx it. You're right. You don't want to jinx it.
My favorite moment, by the way, was the year that Alfonso Cuarón won for Gravity. It was presented by Angelina Jolie and Sidney Poitier. Because you could tell the Academy was like, we're not sure if Alfonso is going to win or Steve McQueen. So we're just going to
hedge our bets.
We're going to go with both here and just see what happens.
Yeah. Hedge your bets.
But yeah. Read the other winners. The TV side, Mo.
TV was interesting. Yeah.
Mo.
For Mo to kind of pull out and beat, Abbott Elementary, which, you know, anyone would have assumed like that's the front runner.
Just are you a Mo lover?
So. I haven't had a chance to really watch much Mo, to tell you the truth. So I'm not.
Oh, Mo's great.
I haven't either. That's why I'm curious.
I love, but some of the other nominees, As We See It, which is sadly not coming back for a second season.
So many canceled shows were nominated.
Yeah, but at least it's, I feel like it's at least gotten its attention, even though it deserved to continue. It's such a special show. And Somebody Somewhere I Adore. And I'm so glad that is coming back for a second season.
Oh, did they announce that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's a nice, like, quiet little show that if you watch it, you really appreciate it. So I'm glad that's gotten attention as well. And then on the drama side, well, I guess technically it's Breakthrough Television Over 40 Minutes.
Why 40? Why 40?
Such a weird number. Weird number.
I was like, and what happens if you're actually 40 minutes? Do you go under or over?
Ooh, I guess you have your pick of which one.
Guys, we're going to do a 40 minute award circuit.
Yeah, because if you do commercial television, most dramas are 42 minutes, so they're just making it there. And I guess that's why they do that number. But Pachinko, the little show that could, which I really liked, but I'm surprised that it managed to beat out these gorillas of like Severance, which is huge, and Yellow Jackets, of course, which is huge. And then my adored Station 11, which...
Thought of you.
Yeah.
I was like, look at Mike's show.
I would have been happy. But, you know, I'm happy for Pachinko. That's a great show as well.
I think it's first win of the season of like anything, right?
Yeah, it's I'm glad to see it finally get something because they were pushing it hard and didn't get that recognition early.
So happens
on.
When Squid Game isn't eligible finally. Right. So then we can finally go with Pachinko.
It is interesting now.
Or Succession.
To be heading into this winter season and a lot of those like huge shows that were just dominating are not eligible, and so others can finally break in.
And screenplay, by the way, I just want to talk about that because Tar won screenplay, Todd Field, which something that could repeat. And original screenplay is just going to be kind of a bloodbath this year. But Women Talking, where do you guys see Women Talking at the moment? Because
I mean, you know my feelings on Women Talking.
I mean, we love them. So our outside of our like, where do you think do you think it's palpable on the circuit right now? Or do you think it needs to play some catch-up?
I do. I think for adapted screenplay, it's got to be the front runner right now. I still think that Jesse Buckley and Claire Foy and possibly Rooney Mara, who's in the lead category, so it's a lot more competitive this year. I still think they're all contenders. I think Ben Whishaw is still there. I'm just waiting for it to come out and sort of see how it does.
I don't like its release date, by the way. I hate the release date now.
No. But
bad
do
date.
You think Sarah Polley's going to get in for director, which would then put, like, how many women directors are we going to get in that five, right?
We have checkboxes, right? We go like one woman, two women. No, I mean, listen, I think if they had really put the pedal to the floor after Telluride, I think there could be argument right be made right now that Spielberg would have a real challenger in Sarah Polley. And in theory, maybe he still does down the line. But the buzz has seemed so quiet. And I pretty much know this, that it hasn't been widely seen by industry voters. It's very underseen. And it was going to be a hard thing to get people to watch anyway, just because, oh my God, a movie about women talking, you know, men are going to go crazy and not want to watch it, you know? So I think it's a movie that will be discovered and then maybe get a good second wind, but there are a lot of things that are jumping in front of it. Everything Everywhere got a huge boost this past week, you know, and Top Gun is feeling stronger. Like those two shouldn't feel in front of Women Talking and yet they feel like they are.
I think that was what was so interesting about this past weekend. Like, this was the opportunity for people to watch movies that were, like, on the Academy platform. And from what I heard, they did repeat watchings of, like, Elvis or Top Gun or everything. And it was like, but you have, like, all these other films that you need to go through. And they didn't. And to your point, there's a reluctance for Women Talking.
The screener just came in, by the way, for industry people. So, like Jessica just saw it, and it's her favorite movie of the year, which I was shocked by, because she's always like a good documentary head that will, like, shame me in something else. But she, like, loved it. So I think once people watch it, it soars. But back to repeat watching, that is even a problem I'm having this year. I've seen the last 35 minutes of Top Gun maybe 30 times this year. When I can't choose a screener, I just watch the last 35 minutes of Top Gun.
There's a scene in Spirited I've watched at least 30 times.
I haven't seen Spirited yet.
Oh.
Spirited is fun.
I need to put that on my holiday list.
It's fantastic and should be the lead contender for best song. And not the one you think. Not good Afternoon, which everyone loves. I love Unredeemable.
Okay. Well, it's on the holiday
playlist.
So let's
get playlist. Will Ferrell on the Oscars singing that song.
It's a TV movie, though.
What did you watch? It's
for the Emmys. So, is this the corner now? It's the...
What did Mike watch?
I need a theme song. But I finally saw Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and? I know, wasting no time. I like to wait until the $6 Tuesday movie.
No, that's good.
At my local cinema, because I'm cheap. Wow. We've established that we're journalists and we're cheap.
Can't afford
I spend all the movie, all my money on food instead. So, it ends up still being like a $150 visit to the cinema just because we're having dinner there at the same time. But nonetheless, I mean, what can you say about Wakanda Forever? It's exactly what I was hoping it would be and exactly what I expected. It had those emotional elements. Although, like I was telling Janelle, I think because I was expecting even more to, I was expecting to just like
be weeping,
bawling.
Yeah,
and I didn't.
What's wrong with you people? I cried like 11 times,
but I did mist up. I did tear up, but there was a lot more action, and they did focus more on the new story than I was expecting, which I guess I'm glad I did. They didn't like dwell overly like I thought they were going to on Chadwick, but they did. They were respectful. We saw plenty of him. We saw plenty of tribute, but they also still had a story, and they still had like a new story to pursue. So in some ways, it exceeded my expectations. I thought it was just going to be kind of a tribute movie, not realizing, oh, no, this is the...
We're still in the MCU. Forward.
We're still moving forward.
I think...
Oh, and of course, the
show some respect.
Not to spoil it, but I was not expecting the death in the middle of the movie, you know, because like, well, we kind of already have a major character who has died. We're really going there? Yeah.
I have a hot take. I think it's the meanest thing the MCU has ever done.
I agree. I agree with that take.
Okay. I think it's the meanest thing.
Sorry, but you all know they killed Loki, right?
And he comes back 30 times. Right.
Exactly.
It was a lot, but
that was tough. I was like, I think my jaw hit the floor, and I was talking about it with Nolan on the way home. I was like, I still can't believe they killed
him. I'm gonna give just one quick hot take on Black Panther and the award space. Okay. I believe, could be wrong. I think
we need a theme song.
Hot take.
Yeah,
I think it's very well liked, but I do think a lot of people are reluctant to really criticize it. So I think people are quiet about those criticisms. And I think it's going to get a few tech nods for sure. I don't know if it's best picture. And I just think it's because there are elements that are great. Like I loved maybe 80% of it. And that last 20% was a big letdown for me in a lot of ways. Yeah. And a lot of people don't speak about it. Like, because you want to be, because you feel like you want to be respectful also, because like of what they had to go through. But I think it's not a movie that's like has passion like the first one did, and it's going to struggle on the circuit.
Yeah, I see that. I think there's just a lot of unfortunate baggage that comes with the film, and it's hard to kind of sort of move past that. Mm. So,
but I feel good about Angela. I think Angela's going to get in.
Yeah.
And that's a good, whether she wins or not, that's still up for debate, but like she can totally get in.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So there'll be some acting, but you're right. That one feels a little more on the fence when it comes to the 10.
The last bit here is we are sitting the day, time of recording, that Emancipation is premiering in LA.
Ooh.
Drum roll.
Ooh.
The movie with Will Smith.
I hear it slaps.
It slaps.
You do that joke every week.
Listen, we're going to get this reaction from
just silence.
Disappointed
silence.
Every
Janelle especially has her like arms folded, sort of just like that disapproving, like, Mike, not again.
Janelle, have you seen it yet?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, oh, you did. Okay. We did. Okay. Yes. It's great. And
I don't like that great.
I think it's really, really good, borderline great. And
I think it's great.
I mean, because you have some time with it, and then you start thinking, I think Will Smith is better in this than he was in King Richard. And I think he was great in King Richard.
He was great in King Richard. So, okay. That
I love King Richard. Yeah. But he's a great actor.
Clayton just made the quote, the movie poster.
I know, right? but it is.
He's a great actor. Ben Foster's great.
Oh my God. Ben Foster.
And Fuqua did an amazing job.
Ben Foster's phenomenal. And so is Charmaine Bigelow.
He's a great actor. Also never nominated, which seems weird to me.
Yep.
How do you think Will is doing so far in terms of the Mea Culpa tour?
You know what's interesting? I talked about this earlier today with someone. Dare I say that it feels super normal?
Yeah.
Like, he is working – he is doing just as much now as he did in King Richard, and he barely did anything for King Richard. And I think he's doing the same amount right now. And I don't – it feels like normal time. Like, he's going to be there tonight. He's going to walk the carpet. He was on Trevor Noah. He did interviews with press. You know, like, I think it's, I stand by this. I think it's a lot more divided out there than people want to give credit to. People think, everyone thinks that they're going to write him off. There's 1,300 people in the actors branch. that all know him, that have worked with him, that love him. And I think there are a lot of people who are told me off the record that their team will in this situation. They won't say it publicly. So I think when it comes pen to pad, I think he's going to get votes. What he gets in, he definitely won't win, but he could totally still get in for this.
I think the other thing is that people that go in reluctantly, and hands up, I was one of those people that went in reluctantly. And I think I called you right after. I was like, I did not expect to be blown away by the film, that performance, Ben, Will, the storyline, and just how, like, captivating he is. And to your point, Janelle, he is like a great actor. And I think, you know, I think they need people, Apple needs people to be in a screen or in a, like, in a movie theater watching this as opposed to at home, because once it's,
that's the obstacle for sure.
That's their big obstacle. Once you're in a movie theater watching this, you're in. At home,
it opens in theaters on Friday, and then it's on the platform next Friday. It's a one-week run.
Oh, one-week run.
1 week.
Take note.
Janelle, where do you fall on the Charmaine part of it? Do you think she's viable?
I think she's excellent, and I think anything is possible. I'm kind of waiting to see how the movie takes off, sort of like I was saying with Women Talking. Like, you know, I know what people in the industry think. I'm kind of curious how it'll play with wider audiences. If people are even,
did you say wider, you know, or whiter?
Wider okay. audiences.
No, both viable questions, by the way. Like, how does this play with white audiences is, like, really a question. I mean, listen, box office isn't going to matter. Not that it matters anymore anyway. I think we're, like, box office is so sad right now. Last weekend was the saddest box office in history, I think.
Yeah. No, it's troubling. It's troubling. Ooh, that just brought it down.
I know. I was just thinking. I was like, God, we have to save cinema. And Emancipation, let's say Emancipation saves cinema, but like we don't see Emancipations if the movie theaters die.
Well, I mean, hopefully you do have the streamers who really are sort of continuing to, you know, push the kind of thoughtful independent style film that, you know, if the theatrical business really does become just about blockbusters, then, you know, the streamers have managed to pick up the ball in terms of storytelling.
That goes to Jazz's point then, is like, then the theater, because Emancipation really lives in a theater. Maybe it will play well at home. I can't wait to watch it at home because I really want to know how it feels.
I mean, a great movie will be great. I remember watching Casablanca on a airplane on the little 3-inch screen, and boy, does it hold up.
I think I'm talking like Gravity. Like, I've never watched Gravity, I think, again.
I actually watched 300 on an airplane. On a little screen one time. Yeah, yeah. Not to compare 300 to Casablanca, but like, I was surprised how well it held up, because that was my first time seeing it.
I hate to tell you all this, but all of our kids are watching everything on their phones, and that is the future.
Not my kid. I raised her to look at a movie TV screen at minimum.
I will say the other thing that makes Emancipation so great in a movie theater is Robert Richardson's cinematography. It is something to be seen. But see how the reactions tonight.
Well, in the meantime, I hate to
us up. Go ahead. No, you could do it.
Scare everyone. Well, I just want to say we're already next week, we're going to be bringing our predictions for the Golden Globes. Nominations are coming on the 12th. So look alive, everyone. We're heading knee deep into this.
Wow.
This season in January.
I mean, listen, Friday's New York Film Critics Circle. We're here. My predictions will be up by the time you guys are listening to this. I'm predicting Tar will be big there. But I did like an informal polling of some of the members. Think Tar, Fabelmans, Armageddon Time, and maybe Glass Onion are like the favorites there. But I'm looking for a wild card choice for them. I think they're going to give Best Actor to Tom Cruise.
Ooh.
They love him, even though he sent his Golden Globes back.
No, I'll talk about New York Film Critics.
We'll get to Globes next.
I'm so sorry.
Golden Globes is another. Golden Globe winner, Will Smith. I'm putting money on it right now. That's happening. I just feel like it's inevitable. Talk about ratings.
And that's exactly what they want.
They're not going to hesitate there.
Yeah. Well,
be fun.
We shall see. In the meantime, thanks, y'all. We'll see you next week.
I love seeing the boxes of you ladies. I hope to see you in 3D next time.
We'll be back together next week.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye. Test was negative, by the way.
After the break, Pinocchio director Guillermo del Toro. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, and I'm Clayton Davis. The animation medium, often dismissed as a genre for kids, continues its ongoing fight for respect in Hollywood. After 1,000 days of shooting, Pinocchio directors Guillermo del Toro and Mark Gustafsson take on the famous children's novel from 1883, and it's yet another elevation in the way animation can be used to tell rich stories, even familiar ones.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story you may think you know, but you don't.
Over there! What is that?
Papa! It speaks!
He's just a puppet!
No, I'm not! I'm a real boy!
People are sometimes afraid of things they don't know.
I don't understand!
Gregory Mann, Ewan McGregor, David Bradley, Tilda Swinton, and Finn Wolfhard are part of the rich ensemble on this new take about the fabled wooden boy who goes on an enchanted adventure. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio has garnered critical acclaim and is one of the leading contenders for animated feature. In addition, Netflix is also making a substantial push to have the film recognized for Best Picture, a category that has only seen three animated nominees in history: Beauty and the Beast, Up, and Toy Story 3. Del Toro, who produces, directs, and co-writes, also offers his talents as a songwriter with the beautiful number Ciao Papa, penned with his co-writing composer Alexandre Desplat and Ruben Katz. Working in the business for over 30 years, Del Toro has written 34 screenplays, but has only made 12 of them. One of those is the unfinished and long-rumored Mountains of Madness, which he thinks can be made, but would need to be rewritten because he thinks it can be made with stop-motion animation. I recently caught up with Del Toro to talk about Pinocchio and what's next for the famed auteur. We began by talking about stop-motion's place in animation.
Well, it started right away. I mean, it really, you go back to the beginnings of cinema and it's there. It solidifies in the early 30s with King Kong and the sort of Willis O'Brien and Marcel Delgado, who's a Mexican, sort of pushing the art form into heights that had not been seen. But stop motion is of all the animated techniques, it may be the one that is the most intimate and the one that is the most really, really taxing and is not efficient. You cannot streamline it. You cannot have shortcuts. It's an animator and a puppet that has to exist. Animation comes from the word anima, soul. It's infusing a thing with a soul and not making it move, making it live. And this is what we demanded of the animators. We said, we want you to make the characters feel and think, and we got to understand that. So I'll give you an example. If you do a CG movie and you want to change 2 seconds in the middle of one acting bit, you just go there and change 48 frames.
Yeah.
If you want to change a performance in stop motion, you start over. You have to start over the whole shot. And that is a big difference because it's linear and it's intimate. And the animators have, imagine this, when you sit down, like right now, you're moving on your chair, you're looking at me, you're nodding a little. Those are at least 6 vectors of action that the animator needs to, and if we're talking, then you add lip syncing. The animator is animating your body, your eyes, your head, and the chair, and now your lips need to coincide with the dialogue that we pre-recorded. It's incredibly taxing.
If in this, in that example, how long would it take you to do that, you know, 6 seconds of me just looking and
it depends. Talking? It depends. For example, in the movie, there is a shot where the monkey Spazzatura crosses the carnival. Mm-hmm. Right? And enters through a wire and then he runs through. That shot took 16 weeks. 16 weeks. Because the vectors of action are multiple. He crosses a guy lifting weights, a guy pushing a wheel of fortune, a guy pushing a barrel, he jumps over, blah, 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 and finally gets to the steps of the caravan. So in that instance, 16 weeks, I'll give you an example. Pinocchio interacting with the Sphinx in the limbo.
Yeah.
Took over 2 years, you know?
Wow.
And those few minutes of film took over 2 years.
Are you working on like one scene at a time? Or are you working on multiple things?
No. You start with one set or two. The next couple of weeks, you go to four sets. The next couple of weeks, you go to eight. And we ended up in under the same warehouse with over 60 working sets all at the same time. You're shooting with 60 units.
You just walk in, like, it's checking well, things out here. Well,
let's say that 22 are setting up,
yeah.
10 are dismantling, and 40 are gearing up or shooting.
The labor that goes into that is, again, because people don't understand it, they don't see it, they just see, you know, what's on their screen. They're like, oh, you drew something or you made things move and you took a picture. It's so undervalued.
It's impossible to understand.
But it also, to these artists that do it, so many of them will never know their names, will never.
That's why we did it very differently on Pinocchio. On Pinocchio, I spoke to the animators and I said, you're actors.
Mm-hmm.
So every day, Mark Gustafson, my co-director, and I, we would instruct the actors. And we would say, this is what we need from the shot. You, of course, have storyboards and voice recordings. And then you say, like, look, scratch your ear, the ear of the puppet on this line, or lean on the door and do this and that. And but we would say, if you have any other idea, if the puppet tells you it wants to do something else, do it. Because like any other actor, between action and cut, you control the shot.
Okay.
And I said, please feel like that. We guaranteed that they would be credited right next to the cast, which is incredibly unusual. And we did that. You see the movie and the voice cast comes up and then immediately the animators, because they are actors. And finally, what we did is to guarantee them that we would not respond to any, we would not have previews, audience previews to get notes, and we would get no notes from the studio creatively, that we would protect what we were doing, and we were able to enforce it.
Well, first of all, best cast ensemble at SAG, I'm down for it. We could just all bring that together. But you brought up a good point, and the notes, not getting notes. There are so many masters in cinema that you know, you're in my top 10. Martin Scorsese's in my top 10. Like I revere you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, and maybe it's my own personal opinion, like not everyone can do what you did on Pinocchio with no notes and it turn out great. You know, I think we seem to be in a time where there's, I'm calling it like, quote unquote, auteur entitlement. Like people think that they
can run free.
They could just run free.
Yeah, but that's a different symptom. I mean, I think that when you have a family that is so closely knit creatively, like Mark Gustafson, like Shadow Machine, like Patrick in the core writing, everybody knows that there is no immunity.
Mm-hmm.
To each other. We really keep checks and balances creatively with each other. Alexander Desplat, you know, the key, Frank Passingham and cinematography. We don't run a monarchy.
Yeah.
We run a really beautiful collaborative effort. The animators are given voice we tell them, tell us.
Yeah.
You want to try something? You know, and so if what is impossible is the monarchy is not a desirable state for a storyteller. It's important to have the last word.
Mm-hmm.
It's not important to have the only word. There's a big difference. And because I've been doing this for 30 years, I understand that this is not something that you do alone. You may see the beginning and the end alone because we, you know, I understand my job as co-writer, co-producer, co-director. I open the bar, I clean the cups, I serve the clients, and I clean the bar and turn off the light at the end. I do that. I start and I finish more than anybody else in the middle. So I want to be able to guide it, but the collaboration is real.
Yeah.
It's not something you say and don't do.
Yeah.
And when you don't do it, I do think the movies get a little lost.
Yeah. Thank you for that. A question for you on co-directors. I'm actually in the middle of writing a piece on this, and it might mm-hmm. be out by the time your interview goes up. Mm-hmm. The title of co-director.
Yeah.
And this is, I feel like it's a silly title mm-hmm. for a lot of animation. Yeah. Seems to be the one that has it the most. There's a director and then a co-director.
No, I think it needs to be two directors.
Yeah, I guess there's no difference, right?
I think you can differentiate the duties. Like I'm a writer, director, producer.
Mm-hmm.
That's my function, crosses those three lines. Mark is not going to have to meet on the financing of the movie. Mark is not going to have to meet on the screenplay of the movie.
Yeah.
But the rest of the functions, some of which fall, like the day-to-day on the set, will fall more onto Mark. But we will both have a day-to-day interaction with the yeah. animators. We will both launch the shot. We will both approve or disapprove the shots. But if a light is not working on the set that day, he deals with that. Or if an animator gets lost in a sequence and needs a little guidance that day, mm-hmm. he's going to be there. But then in the mixing or color correction, I may take over a little stronger. So, you know, it flows and ebbs. But I've done directing together in animation a few times with Rodrigo Blas
mm-hmm.
on the Trollhunters and the Tales of Arcadia
yeah.
series. And I think it's necessary in animation. I think it's good because you can keep an eye for all four coordinates in an easier way. The process is too long. Imagine it's 1,000 days of shoot. So it helps to have an extra set of instincts and an extra set of pair of eyes.
Yeah. Thank you. Well put. I want to talk about your venture now into winning a Grammy as a songwriter.
Well,
I guess there's an album coming out soon.
Well, there's something. I don't know. I don't know about that, but it's fun to write.
Yeah. Talk about Ciao Papa with Desplat, that
yeah,
talented
we,
guy.
Well, we I started... We actually approached songwriters, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult to schedule even a meeting. And I said to Alexander, why don't I start with the lullaby, which is my son? And we hit it completely. Mm-hmm. I wrote those lyrics alone, and Alexander and I just did the song together. And we said we were really happy, and we sketched the rest of the songs. And Patrick helped with one of the songs, and we thought we got it, but then we saw the lyrics that we were producing, and we needed help
wow.
to really work in the lyrical sense. And Alexander suggested Cats, and he came in, and you know, I really am in awe of Alexander. And Cats and him, unbeknownst to most people, mm-hmm. had written a hit song in the past called My Boat. Mon Bateau, which was a huge hit in France,
oh, really?
like a summer song,
and
so they had that partnership.
If it hits number one on iTunes after this podcast, then you have to cite that.
No, but you can actually see it on YouTube.
Really,
oh, Mon Bateau. Awesome. Mon Bateau.
I want to ask you from Kronos to now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first day walking on set
yes.
as a director?
Yes.
describe to me what that felt like.
Well, I think that you come in with a set of tools that is, you have five tools on your first movie, six, seven. I mean, if you are really David Fincher, you bring a considerable toolbox. But if you're not, I mean, I have never done commercials as director. Mm-hmm. I have never done only anything but shorts. So you come in and you're dealing with a crew. I mean, normally when you are a short filmmaker, you're dealing with a crew of 20. Mm-hmm. You come into the first day of shooting a professional movie, you're dealing with a crew of 100, 120, you know? So the most delicate thing is, I think the younger you are, the more you're rigid, mm-hmm. which is funny to say. And the more experience you get, you understand that the desirable condition is flexibility.
Yeah.
You actually, there is a thing in the Tao that says that which is rigid is the brother of death. It will break and be brittle. That which is flexible will never break. And it actually, what the big difference is the number of tools, the number of experiences you've had. I mean, after 30 years, I don't think I can deal with something new. And I know compositing, color correcting, traveling mats. I know everything that is necessary for what I do, animation. I have all the tools that I need. And that's a big difference. You come in a way more flexible, more ready to listen. When you come in as a young director, you want to talk. Yeah. When you come in as an older director, you want to listen, you know?
I have to ask, because you set the internet ablaze,
mm-hmm.
Mountains of Madness.
Yeah. Well, I wish we could make it.
Is it no? It's like well, never?
I think there is, again, I've said this in the past. I've written or co-written 34 screenplays. I made 12 movies. There are 22 screenplays that I never got to make. I think it would be great to make it. And I have come to the conclusion that you could make it in stop motion. So maybe, you know, I think...
So you have to wait 1,000 days?
Well, you have to rewrite it.
Okay.
You have to rewrite it because when you write for animation, you cannot just do a live action script.
Yeah.
The rules are different. For example, the way you watch a puppet act is very enrapturing and very deep. It's different than watching an actor. I don't know how that happens, but it happens. Even any form of animation. Like we used to say, and we were at DreamWorks. I was at DreamWorks for almost a decade. And, We used to say the way the light falls on a digital creature is so fascinating. And if you light an actor the same way, it's an actor that you lit. And there's an enrapturing quality to animation.
Last time we spoke, it was during Nightmare Alley, right before mm-hmm. it got nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm a Nightmare Alley fan. Yeah, I love it. Love it so much. You always say there's monsters, like, creeping around that you want to make. What are you making next?
Well, I'm working on a monster movie. I cannot say the title because it may change. I mean, I can end up making something else. But I'm right now I'm writing and designing, and we've been for the last couple of years, and hopefully that's the next. But anything can happen, you know. We don't know yet if there's a second season of Cabinet. You know, there's a creature loose in the world called the algorithm
mm-hmm.
that makes a lot of decisions. So we haven't gotten
that thing, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It runs around.
I imagine that creature clearly, yeah.
Yeah. You should do an adaptation of it and see how that looks.
Curse of the algorithm.
That's filmmaker Guillermo del Toro. His take on Pinocchio is in select theaters and hits Netflix on December 9th. Demonstrating how to make the most of limited screen time, Charmaine Bingwa is unflinching as the emotional pillar of Apple Original Films' Emancipation. She plays Dodine, the wife of Peter, played by Will Smith, and mother to his children, to whom he's desperately trying to return. There are elements that feel similar to Jessica Chastain's work in Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life, which isn't overtly loud, but still incredibly moving. in a wide open supporting actress race. We can only hope the Academy won't overlook such a breakout talent because of misgivings about the film's star and producer. I recently spoke with her about the difficulty of portraying such a prolific character and being able to represent the LGBTQ community in such a positive light. We began by discussing what brought her to this industry.
It has been a wild and wacky journey. I was in Australia not following my dream. I think I was doing like corporate work and, you know, one day I was working at this underwear company, strangely, and they came in one day and were like, hey, this business has been bought. So if you have a job, you have 7 days to decide whether you're going to move interstate or not. And it was like a real defining moment for me because I was like, hang on a minute, I don't like doing this enough to like move and leave all my friends and family. And it actually made me realize like, well, what do you want to do? And at the time I wanted to be a singer. And so I went and enrolled in, quit my job, quit all my security and just went and enrolled in, you know, I went to get my music degree. And while I was there, I took an elective in acting and just something clicked. And I was like, okay, I think this is it. So yeah. And then, you know, finished the course and got an agent and decided to move to the United States.
Are you very critical of other underwear brands when you walk by them? Like, is this now giving you a keen sense of like good and bad underwear?
It's my little nuance. I'm like, what is going on with that stitching? Yeah. I still have that talent, Clay. Yes. Don't worry.
I say that all the time because the job I had before here when I was in corporate world, I worked for a college organization. So I have this, it was an honor society that worked at colleges.
Yeah.
So I had this weird unneeded knowledge of every college in the entire country. Like I could tell you, I know all of them, where they're from. I could tell you if they're big, small, like it's very useless.
I worked in banking for a while as well. So I have a lot of useless financial
No, that's kind of needed.
Well, actually, it's very helpful. Yeah. No, it's coming handy.
We will have a separate talk after this.
For our next podcast. Yeah.
So then you know, come to say, what was your first audition process, like what were you trying to do? How did you end up?
Yeah, I think I was lucky enough to have my my first manager. I sorted her out before I left Australia. So came over here and just didn't really know what to expect. And I remember there was a role, it was with Carmen Cuba, who's an amazing casting director. You know, admire and respect. And I remember getting very close, like just straight off the bat of landing, very close to like a big role in a big film. And it was just enough encouragement to be like, keep going. And then I think it was within 9 months of being here, I was lucky enough to be awarded the Heath Ledger Scholarship, which changed my life completely. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I think I'm meant to be here.
Can you tell people about that scholarship? Because I read that and I was like, so like, you've heard, obviously we've heard about it for years.
Yes.
But then we don't get to see the fruits of that, you know, and now we do.
Here is one fruit.
Yeah.
So it's an award that they give to a promising actor under the age of 35 who is seen to have like immense global potential, and it's phenomenal. Like they're an amazing organization called Australians in Film. They give you like everything you need for a career. So it's like training with like 10 of the best teachers and showreels and editing. And I think the main thing is just, people in the industry over here know, so all of a sudden you're on their radar and doors open. So
I mean
Heath Ledger is just iconic, and to be associated with his legacy is insane. And I just felt really blessed to be like the first person of color to win in 10 years. So.
That's incredible. And I met you before today. We met at the Gotham Awards.
Yes.
Where Michelle Williams got a tribute on. Were you able to see her, talk to her? Have you ever met her?
I wasn't able to grab her like in the background or anything. I wish I could and did, but it was a buzzing room.
I know.
It's beautiful to hear her speak.
Yeah. I just like, to see that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But like, it's good to see his memory living on, and now we have you.
Helping so many, many artists like get their break. It's so wonderful.
So I'm a firm believer that the bones of an actor is built on the stage.
Mm.
You don't need stage acting to be a great actor, but the ones that we remember forever, they have their bones on the stage. And you were in a few plays, one, Doubt, which I love. Oof, it was one of my favorite plays and big movie here.
Yeah.
What have been some of your most cherished and memorable moments on the stage?
And I'm such a like believer in like signs and synchronicity. And that was another thing after I landed here in the US, I ended up doing like workshops with John Patrick Shanley after having done the play Doubt. So, and I know he saw like a little video glimpse of my performance, and getting his approval was like, oh my God, he's one of our great playwrights. So, yeah, I feel like, I think it was 2017 was like a really like seminal year for me in my career. I think I did 5 plays in 1 year in Australia that year, and Doubt was the first one. And there is something about treading the boards and just that level of intensity, working on your chops like that. Yeah. And after like 5 plays in a year, like my acting just changed so dramatically. And you know, this is kind of cheesy, but there's something about being in black box theaters, like the way the light hits the stage and you can see all the particles in the air, like it just lit something up in me.
You see all the asbestos falling from the ceiling. Yeah,
exactly. I'm like, we'll deal with that in 50 years. But yeah, but for now, this is wonderful. But yeah, and I think some of the greatest writers are playwrights. And so I think if you work on text that has amazing emotional transition, and, you know, there's a reason we perform these plays time and time again, because the writing's just spectacular. So
it's incredible.
Yeah.
So when you, it's being a black box theater, right? So, you know, your filmography, this is your 5th film, I think.
I think about that.
I was like, what is film?
There's
and
some
TV
I
anymore?
Include and some I don't as well.
Yeah. So. But this is, you've been under 10, we'll say that,
yes,
right?
Yes,
under 10 films,
absolutely.
Right? But you are, as we see in Emancipation, really coming into your own, and you are making a statement in Hollywood that we don't get to see very often. And I remember seeing Emancipation, and then the reviews hadn't dropped yet, and I was so scared to like read some of them, because this is a lazy comparison, but it is apt in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. When I saw it, I was like, Lupita Nyong'o, 12 Years a Slave. Mm-hmm. And I was like, some people are going to say that's going to sound so icky when they say it, but it is that like birth of a star in front of us. Mm-hmm. So when you are here at this moment, and you look through what you've done to get here, what does that journey look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it has been like a long, special journey. Like, I just love the work. And so I'm just, you know, everything else is like a crazy bonus, but I love working hard. I love, like that year of 2017, I think I had a moment where I kind of saw a glimpse of my potential. Is like, that year, I think I did 5 plays. I wrote, produced, directed, and starred in my own like 7-part web series. I think I shot 3 movies and 2 short films. There was like 12 meaty projects that I did, and I was like, hey, I really love this. And I think that was really like, it gave me my spine in terms of acting to carry through. And especially when you work in other parts of the industry as well, like writing and getting the directing experience as well, I just think you become like such a more holistically based artist. And yeah, I've just seen everything that came before me as an opportunity, you know? And so I think when the audition for Emancipation came through, I was like, I'm ready.
So where were you when you got what does that call sheet, that audition sheet look like? Where were you? And then how did it go?
Yeah. I mean, I was working on The Good Fight at the time, and I always joke to my friends, cause I'm just so obsessed with acting. I want to be like on set and on stage all the time. And I think I had like a couple of quiet episodes on The Good Fight at the time, and I was like whinging. I'm like, oh, I just want to be back in there.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, like as fortune would have it, always when, you know, there's a quieter period, something magical comes through to audition. So it worked out great, because I had the time to put the time in on that one. And, you know, I saw what level of creatives were attached. And, you know, I'm a big Fuqua fan, Will Smith's iconic. But it was reading the script, like Bill College's script is just like, I couldn't put it down. I read it like twice immediately. And I don't know, I just had this sense of the character immediately from reading it. So very drawn to it.
When you got the part, when you won the role, what was the preparation time? So like, before you got to, did you get to meet Will? Did you rehearse at all?
I met Will on set. So it was, I was thrown in the deep end of the pool for sure. And there was, I think it initially was, I think it was only like 6 weeks preparation, but I paid a couple of hurricanes to show up in Louisiana and had a bit more time. Yeah. So as
one does.
as nature would have it, I got a bit more time, which was wonderful because I just felt like I could swim in that character forever.
You and if I remember correctly, I think you guys have two scenes together in the film, right?
Yep. Yeah. You got it.
And but you feel their connection all throughout. Mm. Were you aware of the story of Peter? Because I remember when I first heard about the project, and you know, inspired by true events, and I was like, I don't like, who's Peter? Like, what is this? It was all about the photo. It's like, oh, I know that photo, and everyone knows the photo, but they don't like know anything that's surrounding you.
Well, I first came about it when I was preparing for Doubt, a parable. Mm. And obviously that's set in 1960. It's a different era, but you know, I researched pretty deep because with slavery, and you know, one of the questions I've got the most on this junket is, why do we need another slavery movie? I'm like, it relates to every time period. its roots are deep. And so I came across the photo then and I was like, oh, wow, what a powerful image, but didn't really know the story of how it came to be or how it really kind of galvanized the start of the civil rights movement. And so when I read the script, I was like, oh, my God, that's his story.
Yeah.
Like, amazing.
You bring up an interesting point, and we don't talk about this enough, is the global impact of slavery. Mm. Like, you know, obviously I'm born in America, so I always look at it through the American lens.
Yeah.
And you're Australian. Mm. And I believe, correct if I'm wrong, your family's from Zimbabwe.
Yes,
correct?
No, yes.
Okay, all right, good.
You got it.
I'll make sure I don't want to mess that up. Yes. So what, I don't think enough American listeners, audiences that are listening to this right now, know what that, does the lens look the same for you as it does for people here?
And, you know, I'm shooting in South Africa right now. So I feel like I've had the opportunity to live in a lot of different places around the world. And it is, it's ever present. I think, you know, it's not an American only problem being black. We face so many inequalities and challenges in our lives. But I think you do get to see, which I think was helpful for the film in a way, you get to see the different nuances of the way each society kind of communicates the inequity to you. Super fascinating, you know, being in South Africa as well, just because you feel the roots of apartheid over there. And so, then it's always interesting being over here as well. And, you know, I know people have spoken in the past about, okay, you're Australian, so how do you like tell this story? But it's like, you know, when I'm over here as well, like, you know, if I'm pulled over by the police, I'm still black. Yeah,
yeah. the accent doesn't do
very
anything.
Universal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
accent doesn't do anything for me here.
Yes.
They just actually go, wait, what?
Why are you talking funny?
Yeah. That's interesting. So, I had Ben Foster here recently.
God.
He's a terrible man, terrible human.
His performance is so good.
I know. I'm reminded of a story he told on the podcast. Yeah. And he said it was one day on set that Antoine called him into the trailer, and he said, "You have to see this." And he brought him into his trailer, and it was a scene with you and I want to try to give spoilers away. There's a scene in which your children are going to be taken away from you. And he said he watched it. And he says this never happens, that he started to cry. And he looked away. And then he told Antoine, "I feel like I shouldn't be watching this," because it was so raw. He felt like he was seeing something that he had no right to see, almost in a way. There are purist actors like Ben Foster, like Charmaine Bingwa, that tap into something that stays with you for some time. Tell me about her and where she came from and how she remains.
Mm. Mm. I just, like, sorry, I well up thinking about her because I just adore her as a character. And you know, for me and, you know, my family, you know, my family's from Zimbabwe. They left just after the war. They experienced the Rhodesian War over there and they came over here. And to me, like, my mother is someone who has gone through extreme adversity, but has just always selflessly put her children and her family first. And I have grown up around Black women who are strong and courageous and tender. So I, you know, I felt like a great responsibility, not only because it was, this film is, you know, has a lot of historical accuracy, but also because, you know, I felt like I was representing Black women in a way, especially in this film. And we're often marginalized or left off or left out completely. And I just really wanted to tell our story in a way that that perhaps hasn't been told before. And, you know, and I just used every opportunity I could to bring her to life and to fill her in and color in the gaps. Like, probably one of the key moments that came to me, and you know, I'm an relatively unknown actor, and I remember there was a scene, and it started off being a scene that was two lines, not giving any spoilers away, but when I'm with my children, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the scene. Yep.
For the people,
we call that the scene.
Clayton
that
is not
around here.
Yeah,
I got it. Yep.
And you know, that was a two line scene, and I spoke to Antoine and the screenwriter Bill Coolidge, and I said, I think she has more to say here. I think that this is an important moment. I think it's a moment that is a rite of passage between her and her daughter, because her daughter's coming of age, is about to become a sexual target. I think she doesn't know if her family is going to stay together. I think she wants to remind them of the depths of who they are, of their culture, of the strength that's inside of them. I was like insistent. I'm like, she has more to say. And it is just a huge credit to Antoine and Bill Coolidge's creators, because some people are like, don't you dare touch my script.
Exactly. Don't touch my words.
Especially for some, you know, I think they might listen to Will Smith, but maybe not me. But they were like, we love it. Put it in. Great. And they let me write a monologue that said these things from her heart to her children. You know, and then I started singing to my children in that scene. I just tried to, like, you know, I believe it's such a cliche, but I do believe there's no small parts. And there's a lot that you can do with scenes. Like, I worked with my voice coach to make sure that from the first second she spoke, you could hear the trauma that was in her voice. Like, we added constriction to the way she spoke, but we still gave her an open throat so you could hear what a loving, kind, full mother she was. And because she really is the heartbeat of this story.
Yeah.
He's going through all kinds of physical hell, and you know, and so she has to be the thing that draws him home. And I remember we were shooting it, and Antoine was like, great, we've got it. And I just yelled out, I'm like, Antoine. I'm like, can I say it in Haitian Creole? And he was like, oh, okay. And I was so, you know, sometimes you don't know if it's going to make it into the film or not, and it all made it in. So it was beautiful that, you know, he trusted me and really supported me. And he was like, that's what I want from you. And it was one of the best filming experiences of my life. Yeah.
That's an artist. That's good.
Yeah.
Well done, Charmaine.
Oh, very thank well, you, Clayton.
Very well done.
Appreciate it. I was scared to approach him. Don't get me wrong.
I'm sure it's not easy.
Like, and this go is write a monologue where he finds me. Yeah. Thank you, Australian. Your time is done here.
I wanted to talk about, just bring it, go to the good fight.
One. Oh, yes.
I imagine that you've caught in this disease called Broadway fever, because you worked with Audra and Christine.
Oh, my God. These women are delights.
Are you cured of that, or are you just going to give in to and succumb to Broadway?
One of our beautiful executive producers of the show, David Zucker, he would always take me to Broadway shows whenever he was in town and there, and I definitely caught the bug and was like, oh, man, I want to tread those boards.
You dropped so, your singer here, so I just imagine there's a really good musical
if anyone's out there.
Yeah, just saying.
But yeah, I absolutely would love to do that. And that was one of the greatest things about being on The Good Fight, just these absolute titans of Broadway and Audra, Christine, they're mind-blowingly talented.
Just go to the elephant. The first Oscar ceremony I ever attended was last year.
Oh, nice.
It's my first.
Oh.
I can't go to any more, though.
Okay.
Because they're not going to compare.
Yeah.
Sitting there, I'm going to go, damn.
It was
I thank everyone for trying to make it as memorable for me as possible.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
You picked me up.
But I can't, I said the only, this whole time after the aftermath of said incident, I've never like, you know. A lot of people had a lot of takes and were like angry and talking about whatever.
Yes.
I was like, I was never mad at Will until I saw Emancipation. Cause then I was like, damn. I was like, cause it's going to be a thing. So part of that is, what were your thoughts sitting there when it happened? And what has this unknowing ground that you've had to walk since that period up until the moment it premiered last night?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to watch the ceremony that year because I was working on The Good Fight the next morning, and I woke up and my phone had blown up and I was like, what? And I was like, oh, okay. Something happened. Yeah. And look, that's life, right? Things happen, and very unfortunate, but I know he's spoken quite openly and candidly about, you know, as best as he can, processing the moment. But I really, really appreciate, and I just also have to say, like, my experience with Will and on the set, he is kindest, most generous, gracious leader and an exquisite talent. And but I really appreciate the way he has led with don't punish the team. He's like, I just don't want my actions to punish the team. And, you know, because everyone dug deep and, you know, everyone's saying it's a lot of people's career best work. But, I think it's not what happens to you in life. It's what you do with it. And I'm sure it's been a very tough period for him. He apologized, took it on the chin, and is doing everything he can so that this movie can be seen and everyone's work can be seen. So, yeah, you know. And, you know, fingers crossed that, but I really do believe in this movie so wholeheartedly as well. I think that the message and what it's about is going to transcend it all.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to read you something that maybe you read it because it was in my column whenever I talked about Emancipation, that a member of, because I'm the awards editor of Variety, so I look at Oscars and stuff like that, talked to a member of the actors branch to ask them about, you know, they hadn't seen the movie yet, and they gave this quote that I thought was very, very profound, and says, Mel Gibson keeps coming back, and we know where he stands on people of color and Jews. Will got his beating. Everybody took swings at him in the media. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but now we can move on. If he's good, then he's good.
These are performance-based awards.
Yeah.
And I just and he carries his film on his shoulders, and it's a grueling film from his perspective. So I have nothing but admiration for his talent. And you can only hope, right? You can just hope everyone gives it a fair shot.
And the last question, this is the good stuff that you don't think of, but you dream about with a shampoo bottle typically in the shower. And it is, you're sitting with the awards editor of Variety that sees awards potential in this film. It is not invisible to me that someone like yourself being nominated on top of the merits of it represents a underserved group of not only Black women, Australian Black women. Where's our last Australian Black woman?
Like, bringing like niche marginalization
I really went deep there.
It's a particular brand.
But Black women in general, but also 1 year after Ariana DeBose became the first queer woman of color to win supporting actress. Mm. And it was the most beautiful moment. She was also the second Latina to ever win an acting Oscar.
Oh my God, and so well deserved.
You know, 60 years after the first for the woman that played the same role. So all problems, we can digest another time, but it's got to, you're not unapologetic. You're not shy about who you are. It's probably why I love you so much. Can you talk about what this, I don't say this tour, this moment in time is meaning to you?
And thank you. And so many things. Because, I mean, personally, it's been a long journey to get comfortable in my skin. And I know for people, you know, for queer people as well, it often is a long and hard journey to be comfortable with who you are and where you're at. And I'm so happy and adamant about being open. And I'm so proud, you know, of getting to that place and proud to be seen and represented. And, you know, it just means a lot because when I was a kid, I didn't see any of me reflected on TV. And gosh, it would have made it an easier journey if I just knew it, my existence mattered and I'm not abnormal and I can go on and lead a productive life and, you know, hopefully be a good influence on the world. So, yeah, and I'm just happy that we're in this place in society because it definitely has not always been that way. And there's a lot of people who came before me who have fought hard for me to have the privileges that I'm here today. So if there's any way I can help with visibility, I'm all in. And yeah, I mean, that's why this moment is so special for me.
That's incredible. I have to ask this because, you know, you're looking for, I want the next Charmaine Dingwa role, please. Dream director, dream actor. Who do you want to work with?
Oh, there's a long list, but let me pick some people. Jessica Chastain and Viola Davis come to mind immediately when I think actresses. Long admired them both, and they've been lucky enough to work together before. Oh gosh, so many directors, but you know, I'm a huge Aronofsky fan. And I'm so drawn to so many of the amazing Black powerhouse directors we're getting now, like, you know, that are here now, like Ryan Coogler, Barry Jenkins.
I need Barry Jenkins to grab you up. Barry,
I would.
He listens sometimes.
Oh, good. Okay.
So Barry, nabber.
You know, and the great Black female directors that are around as well. So I just, yeah, I'm so excited about what's ahead. And you know, I write as well. So I think there are some things that I want to be, that I'm putting into motion too. So I'm just excited about everything that lays ahead.
That's Charmaine Dingwa of Emancipation, which opens in select theaters on December 2nd and hits Apple TV Plus on December 9th. And that's it for this edition of the Variety Awards Circuit podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest awards predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Janelle Riley, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.